everyone, and welcome to another episode of UpZoned, where every week we take just one big story from the week in the news and we upzone it. I have another special treat for us today. I have a guest who actually wrote the article that I would love to talk about. His name is Michael Allen, and if the audio sounds a little different, it's because this is the first live in-person UpZoned recording. We usually do this through the magic of the internet, but we are in my living room. Michael is a friend of mine. He lives in St. Louis, and I'm just going to get his bio up here because it has so many impressive credentials. I don't want to miss any. He is a senior lecturer in architecture, landscape architecture, and urban design at Washington University in St. Louis, and the director of the Preservation Research Office. His writing on urbanism has appeared in all kinds of places, but today we're going to be talking about a piece that he wrote on CityLab that I will post in the comments for us, called Downtown St. Louis is Rising, Black St. Louis is Being Razed. And this article has been tearing up the internet, not just in St. Louis, but also nationally. It draws attention to the issue of, well, I guess I should let Michael explain it a little bit. Michael, welcome to UpZoned. Let's get my voice out of here and you tell us a little bit about this piece.
Well, it's good to be here in your living room.
Thanks.
First time. So, well, actually, it's like sometimes the actors you're writing about make the moves that make your writing more interesting.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write a piece on Jack Dorsey's decision to fund demolition in North St. Louis, thinking, you know, it would be, maybe CityLab would want it, but probably end up in a local publication. Then he decides to announce that Square is moving over 1,000 jobs to downtown St. Louis, some that are already here and some from San Francisco. The back channel whispers that Square eventually will move its headquarters here. So it's like, wow, now you have complications, right? You have 2 points and all these points now in between instead of 1 point. So it's like I would have been on my soapbox saying, well, demolition is not the only way to remedy neighborhood blight, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's like, wait, these decisions actually add up, and they add up to the city aiding and abetting an uneven economic development pattern. So, I mean, the building that Dorsey's moving Square into, Dorsey and Jim McKelvey, his partner, is owned by McKelvey.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old St. Louis Post-Dispatch building. It's downtown. It's being renovated by McKelvey and his business partners. So Square's actually just leasing it. But, you know, they're getting tax incentives from the city to do that, right?
As folks always do in St. Louis, it seems, when they bring a certain quantity of jobs, at least on paper.
Right. So they announced that, but a week ahead of time, their entry into North St. Louis and its revitalization is $500,000 to tear down 18 vacant houses. And the city's tearing down 12. Actually, mostly torn down. And they're mostly in the Wells Goodfellow neighborhood. They're all in Wells Goodfellow, actually,
mm-hmm.
in northwest St. Louis, an area with a lot of vacancy.
Yep.
But still, population density higher than Ladue, the wealthiest suburb of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an empty place,
right.
Although that's what the media makes it out to be. So the essay is really about, you know, who is this all for? What city are we making?
Yeah.
And if Jack Dorsey's coming to town and the mayor of St. Louis has him on the phone or at a table and is getting $500,000 from him to help an underserved part of the city, why is the first thing that the mayor wants to just extract, demolish, tear down houses? You know, $500,000 doesn't land in Wells Goodfellow every day.
Right.
And it's like, what a predictable and unproductive end. It's like, we might all argue on those houses. Maybe we would agree all 30 of them should come down. But as if this is like some great civic entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, it's a very mundane thing. It's almost like he spent $500,000, you know, paving sidewalks.
Right.
Or something that the city's already doing. I mean, the city has already accelerated demolition funding. Last year, the city increased the demolition budget. And 80% or more every month of demolition permits are north of Delmar. So it's like, oh, tearing down buildings in North St. Louis, is this innovative thing? No, it's like that's what's happening on autopilot. You would think a tech disruptor like Jack Dorsey would think of something more clever or redirective to do,
yeah.
to get involved. But in fairness to Dorsey, who a lot of people think this piece is supposed to be attacking.
No, not at all.
I don't think if he asked the city what his priority was, something good to do, I don't think they would say. come up with something interesting or daring or something that reaches people in a new way, I think they would say, yeah, we want to tear down vacant houses in North St. Louis. Can you help?
Right.
And these two decisions seem like the city has been on a treadmill since the 1970s. One of my favorite books, but I also think sometimes it's like, I can't believe it's a revelation that, like, you say these arguments to people and they say, oh, wow, that's interesting, is John Logan and Harvey Mulisch's Urban Fortunes, which came out in 1987 and critiqued the growth machine and cities incentivizing excessively downtown projects and supposed job-creating projects with marginal returns in terms of increased revenues or job production at the expense of neighborhood development. And they're not even, like, hard left. They like, complain about Marx in the last chapter. So it's like, you know, they're, like, pretty just, like, basic urban planners, right. You know, urban scholars who are just like, this doesn't work. And cities are, like, kind of addicted to the approach that isn't working. And this has been art, you know, amplified by lots of other people. Jane Jacobs said these things 20 years earlier than those two did. And it's, you know, out there in publications from City Lab to Strong Towns to the next city. It seems like gospel. But you look at St. Louis right now, it's like the city's strategies are so much based on status quo economic thinking.
Right.
And so it's like downtown gets the juice. The airport will let the private sector handle, something I allude to. But North St. Louis, with all of its thorny, complex issues, we're just going to reduce our strategy down to vacant buildings. And that, and you know, a lot of people read the piece that, like, kind of had the knee jerk of, like, well, a lot of people in those neighborhoods would think differently. They want those buildings down. And I'm like, that's not the point of this essay. I was not actually specifically arguing about those 30 buildings. I don't even know. At least 30 buildings. I did not go look at the addresses. I bet one or two of them was probably worth saving. Mm-hmm. But the real problem here is just that, you know, the problems of Walls Goodville for North St. Louis and St. Louis as a whole are not reducible to material artifacts like buildings. I mean, it's like we're talking about a web network of health, economic, crime, and life quality issues that are like a bundle. That $500,000 could make a big difference. I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of recommendations in the Ferguson Commission report from 2015 and the updated action agenda that $500,000 could advance. But instead, it's just tearing down houses. And I'm like, that serves to foster hopelessness as the only agenda for North St. Louis. And then chest thumping for downtown, even though it's like we've cut so many ribbons in downtown St. Louis since before I was born in 1980. And we keep doing the same things, literally sometimes with the same building. City Lab has also commissioned me to write a piece on Union Station, which received millions of dollars in tax incentives from the federal, state, and local governments in 1985 to open as a mall, and now has received an even bigger package to reopen with aquarium, Ferris wheel, and hotel. And it's like, I'm not arguing that these things shouldn't happen, but it's like we keep increasing, or like, it's like the well-being of Central Corridor real estate is more important than the well-being of the real estate owned by poor Black people.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, for sure. But I want to make sure that we're not talking too inside baseball for our national audience. So let's take it back a little bit, since you are one of the best St. Louis historians I know. Why don't we just say in plain language a little bit about how we got to the point where North St. Louis is in a state of decline, such that it is even feasible to talk about tearing down many, many homes in favor of any project, much less a silver bullet economic development project like this one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think North St. Louis, to people who haven't been here, would look like areas of Detroit or Cleveland, North Philadelphia, South Bronx, areas across the country that historically have suffered population loss. And following that, building vacancy, building demolition. So, you know, if you travel through the North Side, you're going to see beautiful architecture in states of disrepair, ranging from just boarded up to completely burned out to down to one or two walls, you know, next door to beautiful houses with well-kept lawns, next door to lots of vacant lots that are peppered through there. In some areas of the North Side, they're you know, might be one or two houses left on certain blocks.
Yeah.
Others, like Wells Goodfellow, where these demolitions have happened, still actually have a lot of buildings, but a lot of them are in really bad shape. North St. Louis suffered from disinvestment starting in the middle of the 20th century when federal housing policies, guided by Homeowners Loan Corporation, downgraded neighborhoods across America because they had black population or adjacent to neighborhoods.
Redlining, yeah.
Yeah, redlining. Mm-hmm.
Just and North to Saint, give the vocab yeah. word.
For and if you couldn't got a low ranking on those maps that the federal government created, the banks could not get a federal guarantee on issuing any mortgages. Mm. So it's like all capital left and fled. And so people relying only on their own pocketbooks to fix up buildings didn't work. And you can imagine landlords did not want
right.
to use their own pocketbooks. So property abandonment became widespread. Unfortunately, there was this kind of gulf period between what we have today and what we had when redlining began, which is where these neighborhoods actually looked like great opportunities to black St. Louisans who were unable to move into higher priced areas. And so as property values dropped, or sometimes artificially dropped, as realtors saw the kind of devil's trick of, oh, white people are moving out and these houses are still in good shape. We can get black people into these houses using predatory methods,
right.
some, a lot of reverse mortgages and things like that. But for people coming to St. Louis during the Great Migration in the mid-20th century, thousands of people are arriving here for jobs. They need places to live. Again, these look like good places. But historically, all the redlining continued. Mm-hmm. The banks and the government have really never eased up on throwing money at these neighborhoods. Today, we don't use Homeowners Loan Corporation maps, and we have the Fair Housing Act and the Civil Rights Act of 1968 and Civil Rights Act of 1964, and everything says this shouldn't be happening, but if you look at Brookings Institute did mortgage origination maps, and they're just damning. It's even worse, actually, now today than it probably was in the 1930s and 40s when those maps were first created. Almost no conventional mortgages have been originated north of Delmar
right.
since the recession of 2008. And the ones originated right before that, again, were these kind of very strange adjustable rate predatory instruments that a lot of people now are completely underwater on. So, you know, again, the buildings are the focus of a lot of the demolition programs, and people thinking that anybody critiquing that just wants those buildings to stay up indefinitely without a plan. But it's like the real issue we're talking about is money.
Yeah.
This is an area that's been squeezed and deprived of any money to advance its well-being, to fix up houses. And consequently, the number one way Americans build personal wealth is through buying a house. It's the most predominant form. It's how rising class structure is even possible.
Yes.
And it cannot be done in North St. Louis. And now, you know, decades later, since this all began, this deprivation, you know, these neighborhoods are in terrible shape. Mm-hmm. And so it's really tragic that the city's only answer is just to continue to erase buildings as people move out of them. It's like we've basically given up on trying to reverse all this. And here we are 5 years after Michael Brown's death, where there was a mandate from the government commission for St. Louis to do something differently,
yes.
to push back against redlining and punitive policing and life expectancy gaps and wealth gaps, and all the city's just sending in the wrecking ball and then getting private money, $500,000 at its hand, and it just, the first thing it does is throw it to tear down more houses. And I think most people in those neighborhoods probably want the houses down or fixed up, right? But most likely, they probably want more money in their pockets. They want their kids to be able to grow up, go to high school, maybe college, although that's a very daring dream in a lot of zip codes in North St. Louis. And so, you know, I mentioned the NGA in the article, too, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which is building its new headquarters there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that $500,000 could help is that facility is going to be four blocks from Vashon High School, one of the city's general enrollment public high schools. One of the ones that traditionally performs lower than the others,
right.
But has a very proud community, a very strong football team. Like, you know, how can we get Vashon graduates to walk four blocks to take a desk job at NGA and make $100,000 a year? Well, they're going to need to get a bachelor's degree.
Right.
They're also going to need a master's degree. That's a path that's very difficult for a lot of low-income residents in North St. Louis. Four blocks is actually almost impossible to walk. Yeah. Figuratively.
And so, literally, in some places, there are no sidewalks in many, many places in that area.
But there's another example of some of the things I sketch at in the article. It's like, why can't we really close the wealth gap?
Yeah.
Because the built environment looks traumatized because the people who inhabit those neighborhoods have been traumatized. Right. And St. Louis and other cities that have these conditions, which is almost every older American city, really haven't gone through any concerted reckoning of why does this continue?
Right.
And I mean, with St. Louis, for people who aren't familiar with it, has long led the nation in the highest murder rate. So it's like these conditions are not normal.
Right.
And again, it just seems completely oblivious for urban leadership here, the mayor and aldermen, to be like throwing more money at big businesses coming into downtown without even dealing with the fact that, like, this is a neighborhood, this is a city where 12 children were shot by stray bullets this summer. 12. I mean, no other city in America comes close, but some actually do have comparable instances. But, like, St. Louis is almost like a war zone if you look at the north side and the economic deprivation and the violence. And I think that that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this piece. It's like, are you kidding me? Tearing down houses is like the wrong place to start. And it's not an answer. Because as those neighborhoods get worse, I mean, every vacant lot and they create it is not, it's probably going to create another one. Somebody will move out. You know, this is just going to continue. And the real reason is that nobody can expect a good quality of life if they move into one of these neighborhoods. And that ought to be really what we fight is, how can someone move into Wells Goodville or stay in Wells Goodville?
Yeah.
And have a house that's worth more money than they pay for it? And have a child that goes to college and not access. Lose a relative to a bullet?
Right. And have access to the money they need to fix up that house if it's been disinvested and neglected for a long time. I want to talk about how to answer that, how do we fix it question, which we are not going to do when this podcast is over.
You can imagine my inbox this week. I'm like, okay, that's great, but what's your solution? Next?
Well, there was an article in Next City that happened to be posted right around the same day as yours. I was like, St. Louis is having a moment. Yeah, it was a good piece. But it was specifically about, we talked about redlining earlier in the conversation, about greenlining efforts, about how we can use localized capital to make sure that that families in the North City do have access to purchasing homes, that St. Louis is no longer a city where there are no, like, even mortgage applications on the books in certain neighborhoods for multiple years because those applications get erased when they don't appraise for the amount that the person wants to buy it for. And, like, we need to have our appraisal landscape adjusted because we need to be able to cash out refinance to fix the roof and make these buildings habitable in a very basic way. Do you think that that's part of the answer to the how on earth do we stop this, like, wrecking ball only mindset, or what other solutions are you sending to people on your email?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that article by Oscar Abella in Next City on the same day. It was very wonderful because I think the greenlining fund is critical. And it's like, okay, why not put $500,000 from a wealthy donor's gift into that instead? Because the real...
You could buy two bucks for that amount. And,
greenlining, really, the wealth gap is the real issue. Right. The wealth gap is why our city looks the way it does. It's why American cities are, struggling, really. But it's slow to close. I mean, it took a long time to build, to get these conditions, and to accumulate them and spatialize them in the kind of patterns that we see in America. And the greenlining fund doesn't have enough money in it to fix all these needs. And it only addresses home ownership, right? And there's a whole package.
It's an ecosystem.
Yes. And again, people ask me for solutions. I'm a historian who teaches in an architecture school. So I work with designers and urban planners and landscape architects. So those disciplines I'm conversant in. I'm conversant in history and I'm conversant in political history. I am not a sociologist. I'm not an educator. I'm not a public health specialist. Everybody needs to be at the table. I mean, this is, again, why reducing these problems to buildings is so silly. You'd think an architectural historian wouldn't say that, but it's like, It's like, come on. But the Green Lightning Fund and other efforts to... It just seems like that is the real horizon. It's the appraisal war and then the banks. Because, you know, the appraisers reflect kind of the zeitgeist of who they're working with. So, you know, their appraisal is... I'm sorry if there are any appraisers listening, but...
Sorry,
like all other monetization of fixed capital is a form of fiction and storytelling.
Sure.
And I know this because I just got my house appraised. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, my mortgage company found the appraiser they thought would give me the highest number. It's not science. You know, then it's not like, oh, you only get one shot at it too.
Right.
You can appraise it again. You can fix up the front wall and then do another appraisal. You know, it's like... So it's really, again, it's a good system, actually, for people who are trying to build wealth, like myself, with a home. It's like, so you could tell the story of some Northside neighborhoods in a different way. And I think you could appraise these houses higher. You could change the way comps are generated to be citywide, right? If you if a house in Dutchtown is a good investment, like the one I bought, mm-hmm. then that same type of building in Penrose or Fallon Park should be equally good because...
You know, both North St. Louis neighborhoods, by the way, for non-locals. Yeah. We're getting a
right.
little jazzed here.
Sorry.
It's all good. Yeah.
And that's the real battle. And I think it takes more than just a special amendment, like a little fund of money or an incentive. Okay. It's almost like you really need to do a boot camp for the real estate industry. really, like, I mean, the leading force in segregation of St. Louis was the real estate exchange.
Without a doubt.
And the same in Chicago and other cities, and it was the white real estate community, the same community that's still holding down these neighborhoods. And it's like, that community needs to confront its own past and to change its ways. And there's, you know, no need to feel any kind of sense of guilt. Guilt is very counterproductive. It usually stops people from acting.
Right.
So I'm not trying to shame people. And I think a lot of times people think telling these stories is just designed to make people feel bad because they have wealth and other people don't. It's like, no, because we have all the wealth here.
Right.
And through appraisals, we create wealth. We decide this building's actually worth $150,000, you know, and make it an asset and give it capital. So it's like the real estate industry needs to be brought through some kind of a reconciliation process where it's like, okay, now we need to really change. I mean, what is happening in American cities is that black home ownership is being created outside of city neighborhoods because the same pattern is found in many American cities. So when families want to buy, they move to the suburbs. And they're actually, black families do well in the suburbs. Their wealth increases. There's been several studies. And often suburbs become very diverse communities, more integrated than cities. And that's really detrimental to cities. If I were a mayor, I wouldn't want to be pushing any policies that would push more people out. But St. Louis, according to American Community Survey, went from 311,000 people in 2010 to 304,000, I think, in 2019.
Something like that. I haven't looked it up lately.
And most of that loss is black population, wow. black flight.
Wow.
Out of neighborhoods like Wells Goodfellow, where Jack Dorsey's spending his money. So, you know, the solution, again, is to not only to increase wealth in black America or low-income America, but to spatialize that creation, to repair these places, you know, that are just hopeless. And that's a tall order because it's not just North St. Louis. It's a lot of Detroit. It's Cleveland. It's parts of Pittsburgh. It's, you know, it's like, and it's a national issue. But, you know, this is something that intentionally was supposed to be fixed in 1968 in the Civil Rights Act with the Fair Housing Act and Community Reinvestment Act that came later. It's like, but those tools are not being, the standards need to change because like Community Reinvestment Act standards allow the whole metropolitan area to be considered. If there's a distressed census tract in a city, an investment anywhere in the city or even sometimes the parts of the metropolitan area can count as meeting requirements to invest in distressed areas.
Right.
And so like if you're a bank in St. Louis and you loan to Jack Dorsey, on the Square Building.
Right.
Or somebody like that, or a downtown project, a Major League Soccer stadium, you probably are meeting your Community Reinvestment Act requirement.
Right.
And that's just appalling. That's not why that law was created. It was created expressly to undo redlining. The same thing with the Fair Housing Act. So there's a lot of work to be done. And it's, you know, again, it's not, I'm not saying I want Jack Dorsey or other people like him to throw all their money at these problems, or like, you know, or that he shouldn't be moving Square to downtown and creating jobs is good. It's, again, the questions are access to these things. So everybody in North St. Louis should have a chance to be as rich, successful, and powerful as Jack Dorsey. And that's not the case.
Yeah.
And you don't have to take anything away from Dorsey to do, to change the situation. And again, a lot of the responsibilities I indicate in the article is governmental. It's like if you go to the mayor should be standing up for her citizens and not saying, well, I guess you can tear down houses. Mayors, congresspeople, senators ought to be fighting the federal government to redefine standards used for compliance with federal housing or Fair Housing Act and Community Reinvestment Act. That could go through Congress, you know. You know, that could reach the desk of the next president if we get a change there. Somebody who would want to sign that. Not somebody who's benefited his whole career from these things.
Don't tell.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's something that we shouldn't be shy about asking for.
Right.
I mean, it's like, it's gotten so bad. It's like, if, it's just like, if we weren't so inured to these conditions as Americans, and we saw them somewhere else in the world, we would want the UN to intervene. You know, we would want something to be done.
Right.
So it would look like just like terrible, massive poverty, intractable, and oppression of a minority group by a majority.
Right.
But in America, it's like, well, that's just our cities. And like, you know, one person posted on Twitter, well, I'm glad they're tearing those neighborhoods down. The people that live there can't take care of them.
And oh,
like,
my God.
You hear that so often, though. It's so like we individuate all this.
Right.
And not, I mean, the people post that may be completely ignorant to the history.
Sure.
But the fact that they're so callous toward those who live there just shows that, you know, it's as much having the right set of policies, because we actually did try to create those in the Fair Society with these laws we keep talking about, as a cultural mindset.
Exactly.
I mean, the mentality that people deserve these conditions and that demolition is the only thing that should be happening in their neighborhoods is one that really has to be changed.
Right.
And one reason I published the article and pushed it to City Lab is like, you know, maybe I'm naive, but it's like, I don't think it's going to change the world, but it's like, I just think having these, a frank discussion about like the coordination between what is going on with Jack Dorsey's investment downtown and what he's doing on the north side. It's not about like, I have a magic answer, I'm going to solve these problems, as much as it's like, I think by actually identifying that there's a contradiction, that spurs us all to think about what could solve these issues. And some of the people who might not agree with me might actually have some good ideas. And it's one of the, still going through all the emails, but it's like, you know, people might think this is perfectly fine to demolish as a tactic. But, you know, they may also have some suggestions for how to get more wealth to people.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, I hope people don't read this as just a preservation piece, because it's not really about that. I'm not saying, you know, I wrote one person back. I said, I don't care about the buildings at the end of the day. I care about the people. Fix their lives. And you could tear all the buildings down and I probably wouldn't cry. I'd be a little upset. But it's like, so, yeah, those are some of the things in it. It's a big one.
I love your passion for
it. I also
it.
Think St. Louis, you know, it's something that, you know, Pittsburgh is dealing with this with Google, that something that I read about in the essay, it's that gentrification is not just, you know, fancy coffee shops popping up in one neighborhood. It's like, it's a whole set of maneuvers on how land is valued that favors increasing it in some areas, right? And Pittsburgh with Google is now going through this process. And in that case, a lot of neighborhoods that were stuck in this pen are now becoming very expensive because there's so many tech workers, and they'll pay, you know, $1,000 in Pittsburgh because that's better than $3,000 in San Francisco. So it's not unfathomable if Dorsey's going to make and McKelvey are going to make long-term investment in Square here,
mm-hmm.
a company with NGA and maybe other companies, that even neighborhoods today that look like they're homeless become valuable enough and people will get priced out. Like, I think St. Louis needs a long-term strategy on how to deal with something we don't think will ever happen.
Right.
You know, we have this emergency mentality. Oh my God, the sky's falling. We're this declining place to pump money into our downtown to save. It's like, what if, what if eventually the market goes crazy here?
Right.
And we need government not to be the incentivizer, but the watchdog.
Yeah.
That's something St. Louisans don't think will ever happen. And I've argued with a lot of people, like, gentrification doesn't happen in St. Louis. It's like gentrification as like rapid accumulation of valuation in one area doesn't happen here. I mean, it has not in many parts, but that's not what gentrification, that's not the only way gentrification happens.
It's I wrote an essay about how gentrification is a far too plastic of a word, because when one person says something, they mean something else.
Exactly. And I don't even think that term is completely useful for what we're talking about. I mean, I quote Neil Smith in there, he used that word a lot, but it's because I think people are so used to it as like a, it has a cultural sort of baggage now that it's like a certain kind of a person is a gentrifier and a certain kind of a neighborhood is gentrified. And it's really what we're talking about is people being left out of the economy.
Right.
Like, basically, we're talking about deprivation of economic progress based on class or race or where you live.
Yeah.
And it's like these are basic things that are fundamentally wrong. And I don't think you need a big word like gentrification to call out these things.
Yeah.
I don't know what a better word is.
I think a better word is just being more specific and having a longer conversation about what you're trying to talk about. And in St. Louis, that in this story in particular, that has to do with the sort of massive dumping of a bucket of money and a bucket of bulldozers onto a very concentrated and vulnerable area. Mm-hmm. And there are alternatives to that approach. And we haven't talked about a lot of them today, but this is going to be the longest podcast in the world if we do.
Right. I mean, and even just to be completely ridiculous, but food for thought is like, for $500,000, you could have fully renovated two of those buildings. Right.
Find
the two best ones. And make them come back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And subsidize the mortgages for people.
Yeah.
Or, Jack, you know, $500,000 could have been a micro homeowner loan program. You get two or three people a home loan, right?
Right.
It's just like, and I don't think, like, to Lida Krusen and others, Lida is the mayor of St. Louis, like, I'm not expecting them to start up here, but it's like, when you get $500,000, it's not a lot of money, but you can still do a few things with it.
Yeah, you could do repairs on 10 or 12 buildings.
Right, frankly, Antonio French was an alderman here for years, and now is a journalist. And he used to bring in an organization to do home repairs. And they bring 300 volunteers in one day. And it just, a lot of those people were able to stay in their houses. It was a vacancy prevention measure, which I think is something the city doesn't, that's way like too much to think about. It's like, you know, it's not just these houses we already are dealing with. It's the person next door to one of these buildings that got torn down who has a hole in the roof and can't get the bank to write it. $8,000 or $5,000 check to fix that roof, and we'll have to move out to either to an apartment or, you know, out in the county or wherever they end up. Maybe sometimes homeless people come out of these situations.
Absolutely.
It's like we shouldn't let it get to that point. And
yeah,
I think there's a lot, again, within reach. It's a lot, you know, fixing a roof is not that expensive. fixing guttering where it's like destroying the back wall, or doing like a small talk point. I mean, these are things that are even volunteer labor could do if the materials were purchased. So it's like economic development is not just big employers that make headline news.
Right.
It's every part of the city and every piece of property that contributes to the economy.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a really great note to end on, and it's so consistent with the way that we talk about small bets at strong towns, just to give one of our little vocab words a shout out for our longtime listener. Michael Allen, this has been a treat. I am going to make the executive decision that we are skipping the down zone today because we had such a long, substantial, awesome conversation.
I
want to make sure that people listen to all of it. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for writing this important piece, and thanks for all the work that you're doing to make St. Louis a little bit stronger.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.